other thing. Thank you again, John, for being able to speak, and thank you, Roberta, for that beautiful, those beautiful songs. And, you know, it sort of set a nice mood for memories of childhood, because that's sort of where we're going today with this talk, at least as a starting point. I've titled this little talk, My Autobiography, An Update. And my mother passed away recently, and going through her closet, I came across a box of mementos that she had kept from my childhood. And I spent some time going through that box, full of so many memories, which she had lovingly preserved. And I came across this little treasure on bright orange construction paper. Now, there would have been some picture of me here, but the glue dried up and it fell off. So all we're left with are two beautiful yellow flowers, a butterfly, and a flaming red sunset, which was a bold move to put onto a piece of orange construction paper. And the title, The Autobiography of Your Son. I do a lot of writing for a living, and as a curator at the Mackenzie Art Gallery. And one of the things I've learned is if you've got something that you've already written, recycle it. So I'm going to be actually basing this talk on what I wrote here at age, I think, 10 or 11. Because it sort of, you know, summed up a lot of the themes of my life to come. So here we start with, I should just also say at the bottom, it has a little note here, rating, bestseller. So, I'm not sure if I wrote that or my mom, but it doesn't matter. It starts with my earliest memory. My earliest memory is when I was about 3 or 4 years old. I remember I was in our basement as my mother was washing clothes. I asked her if she'd play school with me. She answered no. So I went upstairs sniffing my blankie, which was a nice smelling piece of cloth. Another time was in summer when I was about 4. We were having hot dogs and I was hot from playing or from being in the sun. And so I didn't want to eat. Well, there. So what can we gain from this?
That's very deep.
It's deep. But I'll start with like wanting to play school. Actually, I do remember even more with more precision what I was asking for. I was asking for more math problems. That was like entertainment for me. If you give me a math problem, I was like in heaven. So it's no surprise that I love reading. I enjoy math and science. I like languages. As a child, I read our 1964 world book from cover to cover pretty much. And that was entertainment for me. So today, I'm teaching myself how to speak Italian, as we were... like, I learned the Italian word for eyeliner this morning.
Eyeliner.
It's good, you know.
That's very good.
These are good
Italian
things to... Okay, we'll come back. Like, I got my eye on you. ci vediamo. We'll see you in the future. Or, la tom. That's one that Isabel taught me in Hungarian. I see you. But anyway, in my work at the Mackenzie Art Gallery, I'm constantly learning. And this has been one of the joys of my life, is have a job where you never know what you're going to face each day. Many years ago, Brendan and I did a class here on spiritual gifts. And not surprisingly, I guess, I tested most strongly for the gift of knowledge. And so when I'm not teaching, when I'm not learning something, what I love to do is to share knowledge with people. And at the gallery, what that involves is helping people understand and enjoy artwork. And, you know, a few years ago, I led a series of lectures entitled The Rembrandt Code, which was really a summary of everything I had learned about art, what the deeper meaning of it was for me, and what I hope I could share with other people. And ever since I It started with a portrait of Rembrandt that I saw when I was a student in New York, and continued right through to what things I'm learning today about in my encounters with art. But it all starts with that little boy, and there's also a drawing of it too. I don't know if you won't be able to see this, but there I am in the basement. That's me in the middle there carrying my blankie on my way to a life of learning, which my mother at that moment wasn't prepared to help me with. But I had a very devoted sister who was loved teaching, and so she carried that on as well. So as for my memory of not wanting to eat hot dogs because I was hot, what can I say? I don't like being hot. And I've never liked winter vacations, and I don't plan to ever take one. And why would anybody go somewhere just deliberately to be warm? Anyway, am I Canadian? That's a good question. Page two. So this brings us to page two. The question of early friendships. My first best friend was Scott Kellett. We used to hide under a bed and tell secrets. He lived in the house where Heather and Sharon Suter live now, no longer, which was about two houses away. I always tried to whistle when he did. He was about a year older than me. Sometimes we used to sit on the steps and talk. He moved away the year before I went to school. Sadly, I've lost contact with Scott Kellett, and my memories of him are not. This is my only memory of him now. So. But I've had lots of other friends since then, and so I wanted to talk a little bit about the role of friends in my life, because this has been a touchstone for me. And I'll just flash forward to my university days, where I had the wonderful experience of being part of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. I know many of you know this organization. I do remember Annabelle coming and speaking to us at our Dagwood suppers, which we used to hold regularly. And it was an important time in my life for the friendships that I gained there and the learning that we shared and the sort of training in leadership that we received there. But that's where I met Brenda, and who is my closest friend, the person I like to sit under the bed telling secrets to. we find other places to do. Anyway, we won't go into that. But we were small group leaders together. Anyway, we were small group leaders in InterVarsity, and at that point, I just knew her as a friend, and we I felt a real a connection to her, and that we were both sharing this experience of taking that risky step of actually leading a Bible study with a group of people. And that's the most frightened I think I've ever been, is the day that I was asked to be a small group leader. But when you share that with other people, it really encourages you and supports you along the way. And then when Brenda went away for a short-term mission in Brussels, where she spent 8 months working with IFES, the International Fellowship of Evangelical Students, of which IVCF is a part, I told her that I would support her in prayer every day. And that was a wonderful experience of supporting somebody in mission, and taught me a lot about that importance of faithfulness. Of course, it wasn't all, real. We also had conversations like when I found out she was in journalism, I asked her one day, what's it like to tell lies for a living?
That was probably a warm and cozy moment.
It was. Yeah, she still talked to me. We didn't actually start to go out until after I left Regina to do my master's studies at the State University of New York in Stony Brook on Long Island. And she had left me with a little book of thoughts about her experience in Brussels. what it meant to be on your own and to be discovering new things. And that living with that little book sort of made me think about her quite a lot. And when we came back that Christmas, we decided that there was more interest here than just than friendship. So it moved over the years. Then, well, she decided then that she was going to go to France after I'd come back to Regina. So I don't know. I think during the time we were going out, we were in the same city for like 3 months or something. It was like, we're married in 1989 here at First Baptist with Barb Mutch as the minister officiating. And this has been our home ever since, and it's been a wonderful experience to be here always as a couple. Page 3, early memories of school. So we move to the first day at school. I remember was at Kitchener School. On the way to school the first day, my mother took me in my red kangaroo jacket. Before we left, she took a picture of me with my sisters at the back gate. After that, my mother took me to school to the front gate and showed me to Mrs. Anderson, room 7. On another occasion, I was playing with some plasticine. We were called up to sing. I just kept on playing, unnoticed. Another time at recess, two girls came in to look after us. We started to play with the bricks, but just as we started, the bell rang. One more time, when I was sitting beside Brian McMillan, we were writing things that started with N. I thought knife started with N. I told Brian, and of course we got it wrong. So there's a picture of me drawing, writing the word knife, starting with the word N, the letter N. So I don't know, what do we get from this? We have our first mention of my sisters. I have two sisters, both older than me by 5 and 7 years, Elizabeth and Margaret. And they were great to me as a child. That being the baby, I received an inordinate amount of their attention. They're now living in other cities. Elizabeth living in Prince Albert, and Margaret in Minneapolis. Both married medical doctors, both have families with children who are now entering their marriages and moving on into a new phase in their life. A few years ago, we had my parents' 60th wedding anniversary, and my dad got up and he started to list off all the degrees that our family had earned, you know. And he concluded by saying, and we have more degrees in our family than the Governor General's family. Because he had read somewhere the Governor General was boasting about having 14 degrees among his kids. So more degrees. Well, my mother got up and she just looked out and said, the Longs are always been prone to boasting. In reality, but the truth is, we owe it all to God's grace. And that, and then she sat down. That was her speech. That's a little window into my upbringing. My mother was a great woman of faith, and I owe so much to her prayers and to her example, but also to my father too, who was a great example of service, volunteering for long hours for St. John Ambulance. And in recognition of that service, he received the Knight of the Order of St. John. So I'm the son of a knight. But I don't know what makes me an esquire, I guess. But I think the other thing you see in that short little account is that I don't like being interrupted, Brenda. And that's never stopped her. whether with clean plasticines or bricks or telling a story. I also hate being wrong when it comes to spelling. And at the gallery, I'm known as the chief proofreader. And even as I'm reading this, I'm seeing my spelling mistakes. So there we go. Some things never change. Page 4 brings us to most embarrassing moments. Yeah, I'm getting to the good stuff now. So, I was so embarrassed when I went to the basketball tournament just held recently. The admission was 25 cents. At the door, they asked me for 2 bits. I thought that was 50 cents. 1 bit being 25 and 2 bits being 50, right? Oh, what did I know? I paid him that much. When I got home, I found out that 2 bits was 25 cents. Another time was on April 1st, 1971. Day burned into my memory. Room 11. I was going to play a trick on Miss Calder. I said a little springy thing. It went, but backfired. One more time was when our aunt came over. We were eating pork chops and rice. I cut a piece, and then I tried to eat the morsel on my knife instead of my fork. My aunt said it was because I was sitting on the other side of the table than I usually sit on. I don't know. My most embarrassing moment since then, well, where to start? But I do, I'm just going to tell you one incident. I remember failing to show up for a talk at the university I was that had been advertised. I just plain forgot. You know, it's like, you know, the next day, you know, somebody contacted me. Where were you? You know, what happened? And I just wasn't, So, but they were kind to me. They rescheduled it. And I didn't tell you that before this one, did I, John? Always a flight.
I have no more hair to lose.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Page 5, my proudest moment. So, and I'm glad that Margaret Zukowski is here. My proudest moment was when one morning at the music festival, he said the Kitchener Sextet was the highlight of the program. Now, if for those of you, Margaret, for those of you who don't know, Margaret used to lead a boys group called the Kitchener Sextet. There were 6 of us, I think ages around 7 years old. And we were invited to sing at the Center of the Arts. I still remember we sang "Hi Ho, Come to the Fair." It was just, and it was recorded. It's on a record. So that was probably one of the most. That was my proudest moment, sitting on that. Yes.
It's one of the most proud moments in my life too.
Oh, wonderful. And it was a great, because I've continued to enjoy singing throughout my life, and singing with Exaltation and with the choir, and now with our own gospel quartet. This has been one of the joys of my life, and but I can trace it back to some wonderful experiences as a child. Thank you, Margaret. And also remember that evening was the first time that I was ever taken to McDonald's. So, wow, that was a memorable day. The other time was when I was competing for the first time at St. Peter's Church Variety Night. Now, this is St. Peter's Anglican Church, where I attended as a child. When they called out the winners, I won. Even though I had chicken pox, I still got the trophy. There is, since then, you know, I really say, you know, what are my proudest moments? And, you know, thinking about my career at the McKenzie, the moments I'm most proud of are those times when I've got the feedback of an artist or somebody who's come to see a show saying that that made me happy. I remember doing a show with Clifford Weens, who's a well-known architect. Responsible for beautiful buildings such as the CVC building, and but also known with a reputation for being impossible to please, and you know, he would you know, if he could find a flaw in something with his architect's eye, he would. But we managed to contrive a symposium where we did a tour of all his major buildings in town, and including the Silton Chapel out in the valley, out to the heating and cooling plant at the university, the church that he built for the Mennonite Church, where he used to preach. And we went to all these sites, and he led this fantastic tour. And at the end of the day, he just turned to me, Tim, and said, "I'm happy." And I thought, well, there, I can't do more than that. Those moments working with artists are the things that I cherish. They're the things that make me the most proud and feel the most humbled, because, what did I do but just provide an opportunity for great work to, be seen and to be appreciated. So that's where I get my sense of reward from the work that I do. A curator, by the way, the root of it, the word curator, is from the Latin, and it actually is from Roman legal practice, where a curator would be appointed to represent the interests of an infirm or underage person. So it's actually speaking for somebody else. And underneath it is this idea of mediating between the interests of, in my case, the interests of the artist on the one hand, the public who sees the art on the other hand, and the institution which is responsible for bringing the two together. So it's an interesting role, and it never fails to amaze me, how that works, and all the negotiations, how many negotiations are involved. But it's also got the sense of a care, and that is something that I really value, is the position that I've been trusted with, to care for artworks, to care for the artists that make them, and to care for that experience that people have when they see the work. Well, we'll finish with my greatest wish. Last page. Oh, there's the talent contest with me receiving the trophy. Yay, and it says, yay, clap, clap, tweet. My greatest wish come true is that everyone would become good Christians so the whole entire world could go to heaven. Also, everything would become peaceful. Everyone would be in complete bliss. But the reason I figure the Lord didn't make the world good is because he is testing us to see if we are worthy of going to heaven. So I guess unless some miracle happens, that some will go to heaven and some will go the other way. Well, what can I say for my early theological training? I told this to my friend Yvonne Petrie, who teaches Renaissance and early modern history at Luther. And she said, thinking about this comment that if we were all Christians, it would be bliss, she said, well, you obviously know nothing about the history of the Reformation. Okay. Well, that's something that it's interesting, because in grade 10, we had a story writing contest. And I wrote this thrilling account of two Christians in the dungeons of the Colosseum awaiting awaiting to be thrown to the lions. And, as the story goes along, one of them they're talking about what this is going to, their fears and what this might mean. And then they finally get out into the Colosseum, the lions are released, and they start to charge. And then one of them helps the other up over the wall and says, go spread the good news, and I'll sacrifice myself for that cause. And I won the grade 10 short story contest for that story. But it's interesting. But faith, though, didn't really become personal for me until 1980, when I committed my life. I had obviously had this grounding from my experience as a child at St. Peter's and my mother's example, particularly. But it's been you look back at these kinds of the childhood perceptions, and you realize they do lay a groundwork. I really want to just end by saying what a tremendous debt I owe to my parents, as I'm thinking about my mother, who's recently passed away, and about my father, who's currently in hospital, how tremendously grateful I am to their example. as my mother was going through her final days in hospice, she wanted me to pray with her. And she wanted me to read verses, and in particular the 23rd Psalm. And just an hour before she died, we had a moment of prayer. I read her the Psalm. We shared the Lord's Prayer and some verses. And you know, that's for me, that giving that gift back to her was a precious moment. And it was also about the whole formation of a lifetime through InterVarsity, through the my life here at First Baptist, which teaches you that, you know, faithful living is the call of every Christian, and to be able to support somebody in those last moments is something that I felt that a lot of this had been leading up to. Anyway, it's I'll just want to finish by saying that as I read this autobiography, which, if you go to the back page, it says, Happy Mother's Day. I only hope that I can live up to the example of my mother and my father. Thank you.
Thank you. That was wonderful. Yeah, very, very moving.